Today's episode of the Open Pantry podcast is brought to you by me, Sean from Open Pantry Consulting. Make sure if you're opening a restaurant or starting to scale your restaurant that you come and check out what I'm doing at openpantryconsulting.com. Everything around operations analysis, recruitment, or data analytics. Everything to get your restaurant, cafe, or bakery on the better side of this crisis. Let's keep going with the show. Guys, welcome to another podcast. But before we get into it, I really want to talk to you about Restoke, which is a revolutionary back of house automation platform, which is purpose built for hospitality and developed with one core belief in mind. That is that time is a business owner's most valuable asset and it should be reclaimed using tech and data. And you know how much we've been talking about that over the last few months since the crisis of COVID. Tech and data is so important for hospitality owners moving forward. The Restoke team have set out to make sure that your restaurant runs smoother with better operations and an easy to use setup and platform that's beneficial for both single site and multi-location organizations. At the end of the podcast, tune in for a second little bit of this episode and we'll talk about how you can get Restoke in your venue with a special subscription offer. But for now, let's get into the program. Welcome to another episode of the Open Pantry Podcast, this being the final installment in Refocus Week, which I hope you've sincerely enjoyed and really got some value out of. Today's guest is the founder and managing director of Now Book It, which is an online reservation system which has grown to be the largest reservation and gift card platform in the country and is used by Fyodor, Mavita, Catalina, Coda and Tonka, some of the amazing restaurants in Australia, and has over 3,000 venues in 6 countries on their books. As we've talked a lot about tech this week and how venues need to align their tech with their outcomes, this is fantastic to have Craig Joel, who is the founder and managing director of Now Book It, on the show. Hey Craig, how are you?
Yeah, good, Sean. Thanks for having me, mate.
My pleasure. And I'm happy that we finally got there after me not doing two good intros there. So, so Craig, let's talk about how you founded this amazing brand and maybe how you started out in your career just before that. That's okay.
Yeah, sure. Well, it's been a long career, actually. Well, when I say that, not in IT, but specifically in hospo. I started my career as a busboy. So basically, at what is now Crown Resort in Perth.
Yes.
At the time, a place called Genting Resorts.
Oh, wow.
It was a Malaysian company that opened casinos. And they, it was a good company. I worked there for about 4 years. I did a hospitality management course or started that while I was there. And sort of worked my way up into beverage, food and beverage managers. And worked in banquets and did all different facets of hospo. And so at a young age, sort of really got the acumen behind me to what I thought to run a restaurant or manage a restaurant.
Yes.
I pretty much then went traveling, actually. At a young age, I jumped on a plane. I lived and worked in the US, in the Hamptons, and ran some restaurants and bars there.
Wow.
And also in Italy in the winter, so I was sort of doing this summer-winter thing where I'd be skiing and running a hotel, this Italian family that I love and cherish and still visit.
Yes.
In the Italian Alps. And then in the summertime, I would hit the Hamptons and work really hard for 6 months. And the money there was ridiculous. So that enabled me at the age of 24 to buy a restaurant. I thought I was ready. So
right.
I came back to Perth.
Yes.
And found out pretty quickly that the one thing I was lacking was business acumen.
Right.
Which was pretty important, obviously.
Yes.
So there was myself and a partner and we built this venue up and, you know, we learned some pretty hard lessons. We lost quite a bit of money in the first month or two.
Mm-hmm.
But we were really fortunate. We were young. you know, 24, we had a pretty good following, local following anyway.
Yes.
But we had still had mates in the US. And I think one of the things, we were sort of a cafe on one side of the business and a restaurant on the other. Mm-hmm. And we were really fortunate in that I still had some friends in the US who were sending me cassette tapes of MTV, which was not in Australia at the time.
Oh, isn't that awesome to think about that time?
We chucked up a couple of TVs and some video players and stuck these cassettes in all day, and people would just sit there going, oh, my God, and, you know, having a few drinks. And then shortly after that, there was we had this huge space upstairs that we struggled to rent, so mm-hmm. we ended up getting a modeling agency in there, and that, you know, then they had all these castings and we'd have all these beautiful people sitting in a venue downstairs.
Yeah, sounds awful.
So we actually ended up, you know, being touched on the proverbial, which was, you know, pretty fortunate, because otherwise I think we would have done our dough. But we ended up selling it after 3 years. The government decided to put a very large tunnel. I'm not sure if you've been to Perth, mate, but there's
I've lived in Perth.
Called the Graham Farmer Freeway. And it went literally through my back door. So they announced it. And we were really fortunate. We sold the property to a fish purveyor who wanted to turn it into a fish restaurant and use it as a tax write-off. But they ended up shutting after 6 months buying from us, which is a bit of a bummer.
Yes.
So then I went back and did a bit more consultancy in the US, came back to Australia, started working for a company called called Entertainment, the Entertainment mm-hmm. Guide. Mm-hmm. And I pretty much ran the restaurant content of over 10,000 venues across Australia, New Zealand and South Africa for that business.
Wow.
And I worked for them for quite a long time.
Mm.
I sat on the board of the Catering Association in WA and then became president shortly after that.
Yes.
Ran that for about 10 years.
Yep.
And then and during that time is sort of where I started getting the ideas of Now Book It. You mm-hmm. know, I'd be constantly talking to restaurants. I'd sit on panels, and every time before I got up on a panel and, you know, forum and had these discussions, I'd sit with a group of restaurant mates and go, you know, what's your pain points now? And I just kept hearing this resounding same bits and pieces. And it was pretty much people saying that obviously staff was always an issue and been an issue for 4 decades. But the next biggest thing was online reservations just becoming more and more expensive. And a few people started to realize that what was happening on the other end of that was not really cool. There was a lot of very dubious actions that were going on in the industry. So I got a group of mates in a room, restaurant mates from Perth. We had multiple sort of small meetings, wrote down what we thought would be good. We flew some managers into Sydney to meet mm-hmm. a development team,
mm-hmm.
As well as got some managers from restaurants in Sydney, got mm-hmm. them in a room, got a whiteboard out, pizza, bit of red wine, whiteboard, and just started writing shit down. And probably, I reckon, within 6 to 8 months, we had a product. We stuck an MVP into the Shore House, which is a 1,000-cover-a-day restaurant in Perth.
Yep.
And that was a big testing ground for us. So the owner of that was heavily involved in, you know, helping us, you know, work out what was right, what was wrong. He mm-hmm. let me fly his managers to Sydney to talk to our dev team. So we were really fortunate in that. And I always believe that if we were going to do something like this, you've got to have your customers help you build it.
Yeah, 100%.
There's no point in building something and then going looking for customers. I'm always a big believer of get your customers, find out what they want, build it with them, and then go through that process. And that's exactly what we did. So we got a really good following really quickly.
Mm-hmm.
We had some really large corporate billion-dollar companies breathing down our neck. Some pretty unsavory things were going down,
right?
Trying to stop us getting up and running. But we launched Perth, and the idea of that was to sort of do it in stealth and then go to other markets. We went to Adelaide, Sydney, Gold Coast, and then just grew from there. And then, you know, I would say in the last, well, every year for the last 3-4 years, we've doubled in size.
Yeah, wow.
Every year, year on year. So it's been a really incredible journey. I mean, it's been a tough journey as well, but it's been pretty rewarding from a personal aspect.
Yes.
We've got some great people working for us.
Yeah, I bet. I used to live in Perth for 6 months. So I'm about 6 years ago, and I'm actually, where was the restaurant that you opened? What suburb were you
in? So it's a place called Swanbourne Beach, which is just north of Cottesloe Beach, like literally
cool.
A kilometre north.
Fantastic. That's awesome. I can picture it now because, yeah, Cottesloe and Scarborough are two of the beaches I used to go to all the time. So it used to be a fantastic thing. Yeah, absolutely. Do you think I'm really embarrassed to say, Craig, that you're my first Perth guest after doing over 100 episodes? I feel like it appears like I haven't cared about Perth, which is not the case at all.
No one much does though, mate. So
do you think though, in you know, you don't hear from many tech startups in Perth, right? Like, do you think
there's actually quite a few? You'd be surprised.
Really?
Actually, we were talking about trying to get a little group together.
Yes.
Organized sort of breakfast meeting, because there's quite a few of us that have started up some pretty successful startups. Not so many in Hospo.
Yes.
There's two. There's another one called eBev, which is an excellent product. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if you're familiar with it, where you can go online as a restaurateur and order all your stock and it gets delivered from all the different people instead of having to put in an order with the guy from, you know, this particular guy and that guy. Mm-hmm. So it's been really successful.
Mm.
There's a few others that have done pretty well. But I would say those guys and ourselves are probably the largest in Hospo that have come out of the market.
Yes. So I'm interested to know in that is, do you think there's been a benefit in you launching from Perth and probably doing the opposite to what a East Coast brand would do? Because normally you would hear brands in your space, you know, be brought up in Melbourne or Sydney, they would then expand to either the other city first, then they would go to Brisbane, then they would go to maybe Adelaide or Perth, depending on where they felt it was going to launch. But you've gone, you know, the probably second or third smallest market, and then you've gone to Adelaide, which is my hometown, which is the smallest market in Australia, and then you've gone East Coast. Like, do you think that's benefited you guys in how you've been able to work out that proper, you know, MVP and work out how to, you know, the nuts and bolts of really making now book it like a formidable, you know, player in this space?
Massively. It was a strategic decision. It wasn't done for any other reason than strategically.
Mm.
It's there's quite a few user cases of it. It's not, you know, we weren't the first. I didn't invent that strategic decision.
Yes.
If you look at Huawei, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the phone company, Huawei.
Yes,
Chinese
of course.
Company. Mm-hmm. It's the third biggest phone company in the world.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, they became the third biggest, and no one even knew. Like, there's Apple and Samsung, obviously, at the top of that list.
Yes.
But they went to Africa. They went to these. They went to India. They went to all of these. The Emirates, you know, they went through markets that Apple and Samsung just didn't want to bother with, and that strategically let them down.
Yes.
And now they're the third biggest, and, you know, again, multi-billion-dollar company that's giving them a run for their money for product. So we use the same sort of strategy in Western Australia. Mm-hmm. We went to Sydney with only one person. In fact, Melbourne was the last market we went to.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, we went to New Zealand before we went to Melbourne.
God,
so,
was that because you thought it was the hardest market to try and crack, or?
Well, there's two reasons. One is we actually struggled to get good people. We've only ever employed hospitality from a rep standpoint or from our BDMs. Everyone that we've employed has worked in a restaurant, is a restaurant manager or previous restaurant owner.
Yes.
And we're quite specific in that because they have to have an innate understanding, obviously, of how a venue works. And it's not just about the tech, it's about understanding what a venue wants to do and how they're going to manage it, and then giving them recommendations that align with the software. So that's pretty much the main reason behind it.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a combination of that, and also there's so many restaurants in Melbourne in such a short, small space. So we wanted to make sure that when we came to market, we had some pretty significant names to throw around.
Yeah.
So that was the main reason.
Well, you certainly do. If you've got Movida,
yeah,
and you've got Coda and Tonka. I mean, they're three of my most favourite venues in Melbourne. So,
me too.
why do you think sort of online booking for reservations has been mainly pigeonholed into sort of premium brands and fine food restaurants rather than, you know, QSRs and those kind of brands? Do you think now that we've had COVID and we've had a change in how people are shopping restaurants, that there will be a change to how people like to booking and that kind of thing?
Unquestionably. I think though, your typical QSRs, like, you know, possibly the McDonald's and the Red Roosters and those kind of brands,
yes,
likely not going to be taking reservations unless they change the structure of their operation. But, you know, places like Grilled, you know, there's a number sort of ones that cross over into that sort of cafe space, I think, or more restaurants. I think Nando's are the same. If you look at the Nando's in the UK particularly, you know, they've all got bars, they're all licensed. And I know that Australia are tending to go that way. So I imagine in the near future they will. I mean, our biggest competitor, to be honest with you, is pen and paper still. Yeah, it really is. And I think there's been a huge shift and with COVID. It's been a massive change. I mean, I would think now 25% of the inquiries we get are from people that have never had a reservation platform before, whereas pre-COVID it would have been 5%.
Right. Okay.
It's not, you know, we would have to go and talk to people about our product prior to COVID, whereas now in that space, you know, for people who've never used a reservation system. And there's a couple of reasons for it. Firstly, I think a lot of restaurants really struggle to manage that. You can get 10 people in your venue tonight, or you can get 20 people in your venue tonight. They really struggled with that and how they managed it. And, you know, someone had to be sitting on the phone for very little return. It made no sense.
Yes.
So I think that was one of the primary reasons. And consumers could not get in to places. And so the consumer behavior changed for reservations as well. Like our bookings have gone to 40,000 a week pre-COVID to 290,000 right now today.
Wow.
I mean, we've grown considerably. We might have doubled in that period in growth.
Yep.
But that's a, you know, eightfold, sevenfold increase. And we haven't seen, we haven't obviously seen that. So it's all because we believe, I'm not 100% sure, but I believe it's because, you know, holy shit, I can't get into Mavita.
Yes.
I'm going to have to book online and that's the only way I'm going to get in. So that's what people are doing. That consumer behavior completely changed.
Yeah, for sure. It's really interesting. I am questioning is now things are, you know, opening back up across Australia to almost full capacity over the next couple of months. And, you know, talk a lot with people in the US and that kind of stuff who are so challenged at the moment because they can't get anyone in their venues and that kind of stuff. Like I'm just thinking, how is a consumer going to act in the next 6 to 12 months? Are they going to continue with like this COVID strategy, like this COVID safe strategy of like booking and using to go out to, you know, a restaurant or a cafe or whatever as more of a prestigious event or not so everyday? Like it's a really interesting kind of time to hypothesize about these kind of things if the industry is actually going
to
change.
I think it has to be. I mean, people have to adopt tech. If they're going to have a, if they want to take some of the manual processes out of their business, I'm not just talking about online reservations, I'm talking about all kinds of tech. But I honestly believe there's two different types of tech. There's the tech that's built by corporate entities and funded for shareholders to make money back 100%. That have no benefit to the venues. And then there's more the self-funded kind of projects that are possibly smaller scale, but definitely have some longevity in mind. They're not just looking for a payout in a year or 2 years. And I think that eventually what's going to happen is restaurants are going to have to catch on. I mean, it's not sustainable for something like a product like ours or a SaaS model, any service by subscription model. You look at anything in hospo where you're paying, you know, a couple of $100 a month or $250 a month to use the platforms. And then, you know, for what it's going to take you in 1 month to call people on a phone or get someone to call people. I mean, how long is it going to take someone to call, I don't know, 5,000 guests in a month? I mean, it's, you know, it'd be considerable and it would be a lot more than what they're going to be paying for a piece of tech that automates it all. So, you know, I don't want to be putting people out of jobs, but I think what we're starting to see is that there's, you know, people will adapt and adopt these different types of technology and they still are needing people, but they're using it for different things. And
yeah, totally agree.
Another area. So,
yeah, I think it's a retooling and reskilling of our industry. And I think, you know, the challenge around Australia at the moment is to actually, have the right amount of staff to work in these venues. We've got, all of a sudden we've got a staff shortage because 10% of our workforce, which was overseas, which not many people gave a nod to, is all of a sudden gone. And now, you know, now we can't fill especially things like chef positions. So I think it's an interesting time where a lot of these people who would have done these tasks, Craig, are going to, like booking systems, are going to be reskilled and hopefully retooled into different roles within the business. That's the only hope I have.
Without question. And I think it's also a case of, you know, it's not just the efficiencies you gain. There's some real solid data around, you know, using existing customers that have come to your venue and targeting those individuals as opposed to trying to discover new customers. You know, it's seven times more expensive to get new customers as it is to get existing.
100%.
You know, with a reservation platform like ours where you completely own the proprietary data, so every single customer that comes in, there's this ability to market to those audiences. So, you know, we heard some shocking stories in COVID where some of our venues were very fortunate. They had all this data. They'd go out and say, hey, we're doing takeaway. We're doing these you know, home deliveries. And then we had other venues that were trying to utilize their data but had no right to utilize it. They couldn't. They didn't own it. And not just in reservation data I'm talking about. I'm talking about takeaway. Any system that is harvesting customer information, it's going to be a really big piece moving forward, I think. Knowing your customer, you know, that KYC approach and discovering who's coming in, your demographics, all that kind of information is going to be more pertinent to a venue's success, I believe, in the future.
Yeah, most definitely. I want to get to that in a minute because I think that's a really important topic that we need to talk about as an industry, is a lot more technology SaaS products are allowing owners to really understand their customer data and actually have that data for maybe the first time as they're not dealing with marketplaces. But before that, I'd love to talk about the challenges that you had in the business during COVID. I mean, we're dealing with, we just talked about capacities there across, you know, different states in Australia and changing all the time. And you're in Perth, which has had, you know, some very different measures in place compared to the rest of the country, but has been opened up a hell of a lot quicker because it's done such a good job. Like, how have you as a business had to manage that across so many different states and policies changing on the run? Like, there must have been a massive change.
It was scary at times, mate. Obviously, it was scary. You know, we were in the same position as every restaurateur out there.
Yes.
For a large portion of this. I mean, I remember a couple of nights just being in the field position in the corner of a bedroom, just, you know, Jesus, I've put everything I own. You know, we're a completely self-funded company.
Yes.
So, you know, I put everything on black. And and as a result of that, you know, it was really concerning. But we took a different step, I think, and a different strategy again. And it was good because what we did was our whole team united. Like, we all knew that we were in a position and everyone wanted to make sure that we continued to stay afloat so they could keep a job. And there was so much uncertainty everywhere, not just in our industry, but every bloody industry.
Yes.
So one thing we did was we had a group conference call with everyone on it, and we just started to strategize about things we could do. And I think one of the things that came from it that was probably the best thing that we ever did was that we called, at the time I think we had about 2,200 or 2,300 odd venues. We called every single venue. Mm. We spent 2 weeks, 2.5 weeks just calling everyone and seeing how they're going, you know, how are you doing? Where's your head at? You know, is there anything we can do to help?
Yes.
And from that, we heard really quickly that everyone was struggling to get onto takeaway. They were allowed to do takeaway but couldn't do it. So we built a takeaway platform in about 4 days, not to compete with, you know, these massive global companies. It was more out of necessity. Our businesses wanted to continue to operate. And so we did that. We did that. We came up with some ideas where we were selling. One of our venues in Sydney was doing like $50,000 to $60,000 a week, very small venue, just in food. Like, they started up a food business where they're delivering food out. So yeah, that was really interesting. But I think the biggest thing that we struggled with was when restaurants started to come up and started to come back on board. You know, we had so many additional resources that were necessary for our business to support someone saying, "Hi, I need to change my venue so I only can seat 10 people." By 2,300 people, which we'd never had before. We had a customer support desk that was just being inundated. So we ended up dividing our team. So all the salespeople, we divided them up in, you know, 50% into sales. And the other 50% took it in turns of getting on the phone and literally just supporting people. So everyone was amazing. Like, we've got an amazing team. We thought at one point we were going to have to put everyone on JobKeeper and send them home, but we kept everyone on and employed and on JobKeeper.
Wow.
And I think when the government announced that, there was like a weight lifted off, not just of our shoulders, but of huge amount of restaurateurs. I mean, I think that saved a lot of businesses. So it was a pretty good decision from the government to implement that, and incredibly beneficial for the industry, I believe.
Yes.
But that, you know, those struggles, they're still going. I mean, you know, Melbourne came back online and they went through this, I need 10 people in it. Oh, next week I'm going to need 20. Can you help me change the settings? What's the best way to do it? We're still going through it. And I don't think it's ever going to, you know, in the near future, I don't think that's going to change. I've got a belief, and I might be wrong, and probably going to be cursed by every person who's listening it out there. But, I don't think this is going anywhere in the near future. I think we've probably got another 6 or 7 months of this.
I agree.
Where we might be sporadically closing down a state border or reducing the capacity that people can go to venues. We've seen what's happening in Adelaide. I can see it happening elsewhere. I think it's just how we manage that.
Yes. Yeah, I totally agree. I bet you're glad you hired only people from hospitality because they've known how to deal with a crisis. You know, and know how to deal with something like this. So that was a very smart move, I think, you made back, you know.
Yeah, they did. And, you know, it was brilliant for me because we had, you know, I'm a big believer in, we have this open communication policy where any of my team can call me at any time, but I probably talked to my staff more during that time and period than any other time.
Yeah, I bet.
And it was really rewarding because they were all, you know, took their hats off, put their dirty gloves on, just got in and got down and dirty.
Got it done.
And I was really proud of everyone. We've got a really strong team, which we're really fortunate of.
Just going back to what I said before, like it's good to see a lot of the SaaS products like yourself who are allowing owners to have their own, you know, their own customer data and that kind of stuff. Mm. Where we certainly haven't seen that in like the delivery space, for example. What do you think business owners should actually do now with all this, you know, this data pool of like information of clients and how they've spent and at least their email address and the numbers and all this kind of stuff? Like, there's so much power there, but I feel like the next stage is, I don't know what the fuck I'm going to do with all that information. Like, you're getting that from other platforms as well, right? Like, what are you guys, you know, at the point where you're sort of advising people what to do or connecting them up with, you know, marketing people to understand, you know, how to use that data?
Yeah, we are. We've got some great relationships with a couple of different marketing platforms. You know, my guest list, the guys you had on the other day.
Yes.
You know, they're play an integral part in the hospital industry and have, particularly during COVID as well.
Yes.
So the integration we have with them obviously dumps data into their database.
Yes.
And then allows them to do the marketing. And the beauty of that particular product is it can be self-managed, or you can have someone doing it for you at a slightly larger cost. If you've got no bloody idea what you're doing, you can get someone to help you out and get it sorted.
Yeah.
But I think we're taking it a step further, and we actually haven't gone to market with it yet. We built something 18 months ago that's we were hoping to have pre-Christmas, but it's going to be a Christmas present or New Year's Eve present for all of our venues next year. We've just completed, and it's a business intelligence tool, and we think we're going to be the first reservation system to offer a business intelligence tool. So it plugs into POS, so we've integrated with a number of different POS platforms. And as a result of that, what's going to happen is you're going to be able to see that Sean came in tonight. You know, he spent X amount of money. He loves Lewin Estate Chardonnay. He eats crayfish. And probably more importantly, not just around the consumer and getting to know your customer. I mean, there's a lot of data in there that you'll be able to see, but you'll be able to see as a manager the top five customers that are coming in every night by spend, the top five by visitation. You'll be able to click on them and see what they drink. But I think we've taken it to another level where a manager would be able to, through a series of different graphs and information, get siloed into the system. So this dashboard basically shows you, okay, I've got a table, two tables of two over there, and I've got a table of four sitting in the bar and two twos. It's a Wednesday night. It's 7:30. At 7:30 on a Wednesday night, and am I going to make more money if I see two twos or a four? And the system would tell you based on your historical data.
Very smart.
So they're going to be able to make decisions to increase the revenue of a venue by things that they would never, ever have had at their fingertips before. So there's a lot of information about that, about how long people are sitting in the venue. You know, if I get people to stay an extra 15 minutes, it looks like I'm going to get them to spend an extra $25. So let's try to extend that experience out. Let's get a little palate cleanser in there so that they can, you know, delay the courses a little bit so we can get them to stay a little bit longer to increase that spend per head. And I think that kind of data is going to be incredibly valuable.
Yeah, I agree.
When you tie that in to things like these marketing platforms where I can say, I want to send an email to all the people that ate steak or all the people that drank Chardonnay, all the people that spent over $150 for my Lewin Estate and crayfish dinner. You know, those kind of things are going to be very impactful, I believe. So that's sort of where we're heading. And I think a lot more, if you own the data and you have access to that information, you can make a lot bigger, or you've got the opportunity to make bigger and broader decisions. You don't have that opportunity if you don't own it. You might be fed information, but you're not going to have the ability to target those audiences.
Yeah, absolutely. I think over the next 12 months is, like, obviously amazing platforms like yours, you know, build out and offer more and more things. I keep thinking that the hospitality managers, the leaders in our industry, will have to broaden out their knowledge to these kind of platforms and how they work and how they can best capitalize on it, because there's so much coming at them that needs to make, you know, to make these venues more competitive and better and that kind of stuff. But yeah. I hate we get to a point where it's just there's so much information, they just don't know what to do with it, because
we've tried to do, Sean, is just decipher that. Like, we've just put up a dashboard that they can look at and go, oh, shit, I should do this.
Yes.
Because we know that that's exactly what's happened in the past. I mean, I remember just being given as a manager an Excel spreadsheet with a shit ton of data on it and said, here, look, you know, go make some decisions. And you're sort of sitting there going, Christ, you know.
Yeah.
You know, trying to work through it. And this is just unsustainable. It's not possible. Right now, there's the ability to get all this data on your fingertips. And I think if it's clean, you know, it's easy to use information, then I think it's pretty easy to decipher.
Yes.
And you know, even with our platform, we've got people that our system's relatively intuitive. We get a lot of comments about that. But I think even using any kind of tech at the moment, there's different individuals that want to use every aspect of every single feature. And then there's the people that just, I just want to get bookings and
sort of run my business.
Really give a shit.
Yes.
So there's really different chalk and cheese from one end to the other. There's a huge disparity between the mum and pa owner and the, you know, the conglomerate of enterprise sort of level customer that we have.
Yeah, 100%. Do you think, what are a couple of the challenges do you think with moving to a, you know, a booking system like yours, like a tech product like yours, if they're coming from a standing start and they haven't had a, you know, haven't had a booking system before, like what are a couple of challenges around it, Craig?
Change. people hate change.
Yes.
I mean, you know, you've got in a lot of businesses, particularly some of the older school restaurateurs that we work with, you know, they've been incredibly successful. They've had a business for a long time. They've done it a specific way.
Yeah.
They've got managers in their venue who are seasoned veterans, you know, champions of the industry.
Unbelievable.
And then you say to them, hey, mate, instead of just jotting that guy's name down on a bit of paper, can you just type it into that box over there, that thing called a computer? You know? And it's like, what? You know, they double twitch.
Yes.
So I think change is probably, and the ability, I think nowadays the younger generation, because there's so much change in life generally, not because of COVID, but, you know, with technology and they're constantly changing, but their lifestyles are changing constantly. So they adapt to that a lot quicker than the older generation. And I think the older generation struggled to adapt.
I agree.
Some of that technology. I think we're getting better at it. So our challenge is making sure that they're trained efficiently. We go to the venue, virtually every venue we go to, and set them up.
Yes.
And sit there with them and go, this is what you do. Now, you've got 20 bookings in that book. Let's put them in with you. Let's see what you do. Well, you know, that guy, are you sure you want to sit on that table? I know that you'd normally do that, but this is the ramifications because you've got a table joint. You know, you just go through those basic principles with them. And we got a pretty good support network. We follow up with people after they've onboarded. But the biggest challenge would be change. I think adapting to change and saying, yes, you know what, I'm actually really for this, as opposed to, yeah, all right, we'll do it, and then, but not really wanting to do it, still writing down on a bit of paper every once in a while.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff, I think, is difficult. Yes. Really, aside from that, you know, you mentioned it earlier. I think that, you know, there's a lot of people still out there. You know, I've always said this with restaurant people, and I was one of them. You know, I didn't have all the acumen that was needed to open up a restaurant.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, in the world, there's usually three acumen that you need to open up a venue, and it's and you need at least one, right?
Yes.
You need to have some kind of marketing ability. You need to have some front of house or back of house experience. Mm-hmm. Being in hospitality, at least you have to be hospitable at the very least.
Absolutely, yes.
but the last thing, and probably the thing that people miss the most, is the business acumen, and that's definitely the thing that I didn't have when I opened up a venue at 24.
Yes.
But often these people, and I find that the most successful people have at least two of those acumen in a mum and dad ownership or the ma and pa ownership of a venue. But typically most people will have one.
Yes.
And not many people nowadays have marketing.
Mm.
And I think with, you know, the social aspects, the ability to retarget customers, the ability to track things on Google, you know, just from Google Analytics, just seeing how people are coming into your website, what they're clicking on, what
yes.
you're pushing in front of them.
Yes.
Engineering menus, you know, all that kind of information. It's a business, and I think people, I can tell you right now, for me, I didn't think of it that much as a business when I was young and stupid and 24.
Yes.
I was going in because I was passionate about the industry and I loved it. And I think sometimes that passion gets in the way of your business.
Yes.
And I really think that people have to sometimes step away from it, take their blinkers off, just get someone in to help manage the business for a month or something, so they can sit back and go, holy shit, you know what, if I did this and I talked to that guy about some marketing and
yes.
did some social and retargeted some people on Facebook, I might actually start getting an ROI.
Yes, so, yes, might not just be here just for fun.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, I think the thing that COVID's done is obviously we all knew that the hospitality industry was so far behind in tech. Like it was yeah. the one thing that was just not there. And to go back to your analogy about Huawei taking over, you know, Africa and India, like most of the reason was because they almost leapfrogged because they didn't have a lot of landlines. So they leapfrogged to mobile, and all of a sudden mobile is king, and that's why the take up is so high. I think potentially we're going to have the same thing in hospitality tech, is the fact that we've been bad at it for so long, and all of a sudden COVID has made us shake up as an industry and figure out what the hell we're going to do moving forward, and all of a sudden we're going to have really tech orientated inspired businesses, which can be still, you know, still deliver a great customer experience. Like you're not stopping restaurateurs ringing up customers and saying, thanks so much for coming in last night, I really enjoyed it, even though they're now booking online rather than ringing the venue. Like you can still
exactly
do
right.
both, you know.
Exactly right. I mean, you know, there's other things that we do that to actually enhance that. You know, mm-hmm. we try to direct customers to that have come into the venue. We encourage the venues. We have a thank you email that goes out. We actually direct
awesome.
the customers back to this via this thank you email
mm-hmm.
to Google, because you know, Google came out about 2 years ago and said, pretty much, we're going to be the number one search facility and discovery platform for everything. If you're a hairdresser
yes.
and you type in, I want to get my hair cut in Glen Waverley, it's going to bring up the top three hairdressers by people that have rated it using Google reviews.
Yes.
So we direct everyone back to Google reviews.
Interesting.
And we have venues now that are at the top. If you typed in best steakhouse and restaurant,
mm-hmm.
I pretty much guarantee that the top three venues are using us.
Yes.
In Melbourne, like if you said top best steak restaurants in Melbourne. And that's
yes.
because they're being, you know, the message might say something like, hey, you know, thanks for dining with us the other day. You know, if you had a good experience, click this button, and it goes mm-hmm. to Google reviews. But if you didn't, we want to hear about it.
Sure.
Email me directly at such and such. Is giving the ability of people to engage those reviews. But there's still people that do it the old school way, like you said, and jump on the phone.
Yes.
And I love that. I mean, if I got a call from a restaurant owner, and they said, oh, mate, I just wanted to say thanks for coming in last night. I hope you really enjoyed it. You know, what do you think of the spaghetti alla mare or whatever you had?
Mm.
You'd be blown away.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there is nothing, there is nobody, very few people doing that in
yes.
market. And
yes, I agree.
Those, while that would be incredibly time-consuming, that would be a huge, huge, something that people would talk about anyway. I think you'd generate a lot of word of mouth about something like that happening.
I'll give you a real life experience. So I had that happen with Nathan Tolman, who owns Hazel and DeZeus and a couple of other venues in Victoria.
Wow.
And I had booked. Sorry, I'm not sure if they use your platform. and he sent me a text because I know him as well, but I've only started to know him after this. And he sent me a text that goes, I really hope you enjoy your meal tonight. Let me know what you think of it afterwards. To which I did, and it was exceptional. And that started a communication between the two of us now.
Yeah.
Like, and that is next level. That is super care factor. But if you're playing, you know, hospitality is going to be as competitive, if not more competitive, in the next 12 months. So you know, you have to do things which are hospitable. Going back to what you said before, for a hospitality industry that really needs to think about how it treats its customers even better moving forward. And I think that's going to be the positive that comes out of this. Yeah.
Yeah, without question. I mean, there's an expectation when you go to a restaurant that you can have great food and great service.
Yes.
And that's not good enough anymore. You need to have great food and excellent service, or excellent food and excellent service. You know, you need to go beyond and above if you're going to continue to have that organic word of mouth being established.
Yeah.
Sure.
And that's what I love about platforms like yours, Craig. Like, it starts that communication. And it starts that connection with a customer, and it's up to them to make sure they fulfill that promise. So really, really cool. I have one final question for you, as I've been asking every guest the last couple of months, is what is the thing you're most excited about moving into 2021, Craig Joel?
Oh, moving into 2021. This is probably a pretty piss poor one, but I would say there's a couple. But I think it's not that I want to travel, because I've realized I've traveled a lot in the last 20 years for business, and realized that I've missed out a lot of my kids' lives, because I've been now home for 9 months, and I've never been home 9 months with my kids in 20 years. So,
wow.
With anyone.
Anyone, yes.
Yeah. Yes. So, you know, that's been incredible. Mm-hmm. So whilst I'm gonna miss them when I get on a plane again, I've got some incredible people that are working for me.
Yes.
Some that I've never met, and others that have been here with me through this journey that I just want to give a big bloody hug and a kiss on the cheek to. that's what I'm probably looking forward to, is to catching up with my team and just embracing them and going, you know what, we fucking got through this.
Yes, exactly. Yeah,
that's probably one of the biggest things for me. Mm-hmm. On a personal note, I think, as I mentioned before, I lived in Italy for a few years.
Yes.
And I don't know if I had it or not, but I got very bloody sick in January of this year.
Oh, no.
In Italy, in the ski resort.
Oh, really?
I've never been that sick in my life. Could not get up and bloody walk to the toilet. I was barely breathing. It was brutal. So, don't know if I've had it or not, but
yes,
the village that I was at was heavily impacted. But I'd love to just go back there and give them a hug as well. You know, they're like my second family. Mm. Those people, we've had it tough in Melbourne. It was particularly tough in Melbourne, and a lot of my Melbourne friends, you know, getting on the phone and having a chat to them during this period was really disheartening. But you know, they went through. They had this unbelievable wave come through, and they were completely not prepared, like most Italian cities, you know, just in anything that surprises them.
Yes.
But I just want to give them a big hug as well. I can't wait to get back to Europe and have a visitation with them, go and see them. On a personal note, that's probably what I'm looking forward to, if I can. I don't know if I'm going to be able to. Don't know that anyone's going to be able to. Might need a jab to do that. But
exactly.
We'll see.
Well, fingers crossed it's very, very soon, Craig.
Yeah.
What's the best way that people can find out about now book it, if I can say that correctly, and make sure they can connect with you, mate?
Yeah, I think probably just go to our website. There's quite a bit of information on there, nowbookit.com. Mm-hmm. If you go to any of the Hospo Facebook pages, mm-hmm. we've organically got a lot of amazing comments there. So very grateful to the current existing clients that we have. Mm-hmm. But I would just ring another restaurateur and ask them what their experiences are with either us or other platforms. And
yes,
we're very confident in what we deliver and our product. We think we're very reasonably priced, and we'd love to work with more restaurants. So if you're out there and you're looking for something, definitely give us a buzz.
Beautiful. And as always, the website is linked up in the show notes. So thank you so much, Craig. I really appreciate your time.
Good on you, Sean. Thanks, buddy. It's been awesome.
All right, guys, I hope you really enjoyed that episode of the Open Pantry podcast. As always, thank you so much for tuning in. Now, as I was hinting at the start of the podcast, we were talking about Restoke, which is a fantastic back of house automation platform based here in Melbourne. Just fantastic piece of tech that's been developed last year. It's all about automating and delegating procedures and compliance, ordering and inventory management, prep runs, all those things at the back of the house, which we don't love to talk about, but we know as hospitality owners that are so, so critical to make sure that our venues run successfully. And on top of that, it has a live food costing system, which is just fantastic. I've seen it in person. Now, it's all about giving you the time to actually run your business much more effectively and see all these things live in your business when you're not there. So I know that's going to be really critically important as we rebuild this industry. Now, for the Open Pantry listeners, you're actually able to get 1 month free subscription on top of a normal 14 days trial. So that's about 6 weeks to use this platform and figure out if you actually like it. I know you actually will. So all you have to do is go to restoke.ai/theopenpantry. So that's restoke.ai/theopenpantry. Super easy. Check it out. You'll see everything you need to know about the platform itself. I know you're going to love it. And let me know what you think as well. Like, this is a fantastic product. I don't talk about products very much on the show, and these guys are just amazing what they're doing right now. So that's why I want to support them. So check it out and see what you think. And I'll talk to you on the next podcast.